Accession number 28464, Reel 6.
Mr. Sowler, Reel 6. this was still the same Army Group headquarters unit that you were with?
Oh, yes.
And again, can I ask you about your officers, your own officers, you know, from your own personal experience that were in charge of you? I know you said that they were moving around quite a lot. Was that still happening?
Well, the thing is, I got on quite well with them. On a night shift, if those things were quiet for a little while, I used to play chess with the signals. The officer in charge of it.
Do you remember his name?
No. No.
They're pretty good. Did you have any that weren't up to scratch that you recall?
Oh, yes. We had a technical maintenance officer who told one of his crew to do an emergency stop with the handbrake on a lorry, and the handbrake was attached to the prop shaft. It was just a parking brake.
What happened then?
I don't know.
Were these officers trained as you'd been trained, or whether you could have come from any source, really?
No, I think it was I think it was regular. Probably territorial, I don't know. But I certainly did not like him. Fortunately, he had nothing to do with me.
In your own close little group, do you recall the names and personalities of those men around you?
Yes, there was Henry. I don't know what his other name was. Henry was a really wizard on making things work. He was the one who invented the idea of how to repair the clutches on the teleprinter. There was Charlie Q. Wilkinson, Quentin, I think he was, who had been a theology student at Durham. There was a bloke called Modlin, Jewish lad, very nice. And one other one, can't think of his name now. But the thing is, no one had any sort of control over us. This is annoyed them, because we were always needed. You couldn't get any leave. The last leave I'd had was in July 44. And we lived a life, and our shifts were different to everybody else's. We lived they would be having a kit parade and all the rest of it in the billet, and we'd be sound asleep under our mosquito net when they were doing it, you know, which didn't really endear us to the establishment.
That must have been because of your own particular expertise, and as you say, the shifts and the conditions you were working in.
Yes. And the thing is, finally, I thought, well, I'd like some leave. And I got round to March 45. And the last leave I had was in July 44. I said, I want to go and leave. You can't go and leave. There's nobody to replace you. I mean, can you imagine it? Anyway, I stuck out for it, and I got the leave. I went to a place called Kalimpong, which is about 30 miles from Tibet. And right behind it was Kanchenjunga.
Was this an army leave centre?
No, it was.
Why did you choose that?
It was the local Presbyterian minister who used to take about a dozen army blokes. And that was a marvellous leave. Got back, same routine. And eventually they said, right, we're sending you all back to Ceylon. I think it was the Devonshire we went on. Bundled us all under that, and we sailed back to Ceylon. Set up the thing again. By this time, these teleprinters, one small thing, I think I should add. Henry was the one who invented how to repair clutches on the teleprinters, because metal fatigue, they just used to go. And he used to use old clock springs, and we used to drill them and rivet them. And we thought we'd had a brilliant idea when we were in Cal. Remington's in Calcutta would make us some. Oh, it seemed to answer the prayer. And we thought everything was okay, and suddenly it all fell through. Why, we never found out. Whether it was due to patent rights or what, I don't know. But I mean, it's so stupid. I mean, we were only signalmen. and they're trying to arrange with a teleprinter company, a typewriter company, to make stuff. I mean, you know, you...
So you throw them back on your own devices to
all
get
the time.
To repair
them. I mean, the same with these cipher machines. There was one thing used to go on them, and I remember going around an RAF unit and getting the particular piece I wanted. You really learned how to be...
Had you learned by now about the cipher machine?
Yes, I'd repaired the Navy one down in Colombo.
What were they like? Could you describe a cipher machine at that time?
Not really.
Much changed since then, no doubt.
Probably, I don't know. No, they certainly kept them very secret.
And you were essentially just repairs and maintenance, you weren't allowed the...
The secret part was kept well away from us. We never had anything to do with that. The funny thing was, the operators on them were all sergeants.
Did they have a common fault that you constantly had to deal with?
Oh, yes.
And what was that?
Oh, it was a bit I had to pick up from anywhere I could get hold of, which I did.
What do you mean?
You learned how to scrounge.
And what was the fault itself that you were scrounging for?
Well, I don't know whether you should say it or not.
I think 60 years afterwards, I think you'd be probably safe to say it now.
Yes, it was a condenser, actually. Yes.
Well, what happened to that to cause that to go?
I don't know, but go it did. And of course, there were no spares, nothing.
How did you get over the problem?
I say, you went round the scrounge. I say, I got one lot from an RAF unit.
That's picking up condensers from other sources.
Yeah.
Wherever.
Oh, yes.
The war was turning now against the Japanese, so... Well... Were you aware of that?
Yes. We went down back to Ceylon. And as I say, how those typewriters, how those teleprinters kept going. I mean, motors were running 24 hours a day. They were never switching off. And there was so much traffic. So... We went back to Ceylon. I wasn't very happy there for the simple reason. A friend of mine was calling into Ceylon on his merchant navy. I was going to try and meet him. The night that I wanted to get off the next morning, go down on a duty truck and see if I could see him. About 2 a.m, a navy unit said they had trouble with a teleprinter. Got the duty truck out. Stuck a battery on, just in case, and went down. It was up a little track, little hut, one wren on her own in this place. Daddy was a captain in the Navy, and it was a flat battery. I wasn't at all pleased, because I'd hoped, you know, for a nice quiet night. However, we prepared that. You know, you did anything. And we, all was well again. Went down to Ceylon, went down to Colombo and missed him at Colombo. Didn't see him again till some time after. So, that would be what? We'd be now into, about June 45.
Had you heard by this time that the war in Europe was over?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
What effect had that on you all, did
it? None.
But you still had your own?
Absolutely nothing.
Was there a feeling amongst you and your comrades of being the forgotten army?
Definitely.
It was quite prevalent, that feeling.
Yes, yes.
Did it affect morale in any way?
No. Everybody worked just as hard. We had a job to do, and we did it to the best of our ability. It was amazing, really. One thing I wasn't very keen about, they said, if we went into Malaya, we'd probably have to go down scrambling nets off the ships. I wasn't wildly keen about that. But we kept the machines going, somehow. And the next thing was, of course, the Japanese packed in. That was chaos. There was messages coming over left, right and centre, radio everywhere. And, of course, it was after that, it was, instead of having to go down scrambling nets off the ship, we were able to travel normally.
Did you celebrate the end of the war?
No, not at all.
No celebrations going on around you?
I think I went to the pictures. Well, I was in Canley. I used to sometimes go on the engine that used to bank the mixed train from Martley. Used to ride down the footplate somewhere out in the wilds and bank the train in. Again, I don't know what the army would have thought really about me doing that, but nobody said no.
Working in the group of headquarters, did you see or get close to them or meet any of the really high-ranking officers of the army?
Saw Mountbatten. The only thing he said was, "Are you all right?" To which, of course, we said yes. General Slim, I did see. Had to be very careful with General Slim. If you didn't salute him, God help him. If by accident you didn't.
What were your opinions of those leaders? As soldiers?
Well, they were winning, so I suppose you had to agree that they were doing a very good job. Yes.
So you were in Colombo at the time that the war ended. Mm. What happened to you next?
Well, we were bunged on the Derbyshire and sent off to Malaya. This would be... trying to think what the date would be.
Well, what happened to you next?
Well, we got on the Derbyshire and we headed for Malaya, Singapore. The Straits Times did not want us. The headlines I remember reading was that they didn't want Mountbatten and his wrens. It would upset their economy. I thought, well, that's a charming sort of greeting to get. However,
why was that? Was that the beginning of the civilian wish to get rid of the British out of Malaysia?
Oh, probably. I don't know.
It certainly was anti British forces.
It was hardly an enthusiastic welcome. What surprised me was going around Singapore was shops had cameras and that in at normal prices. Where had they been all this time? The conditions there were, to put it mildly, rotten. The traffic went through. There was a lot of traffic, as you can imagine. We're trying to get the system under control. There was no water. We washed by fishing down a well with a 4-gallon can on a length of wire. You couldn't drink it because God alone knows where it had come from. You were allowed 3 cups of tea a day, 6 bottles of mineral and 1 bottle of beer a week, which under those conditions is not really the best of things. We were in old barrack block at Changi, where the jail was. There was 1 60-watt bulb for about 40 men. The food was appalling. It was all dried. There was no fresh meat, fresh vegetables, fresh anything. Hours were long because there was so much work. And really, things were difficult, to say the least of it. There was notices used to go around the signal office, Chad notices. I don't know whether you know Chad. What know this, what know that sort of thing. They were trying to make them play soldiers again. It was not good. It was very, very difficult. Of the 3 people that were with me, of the 4 mechs, 3 of them were due for repatriation. I was the only one left. They told me with great satisfaction they were getting rid of me operational to Celebes. There was a wireless unit going there and I would have to look after all the line instruments.
Before we come to that, what was Singapore like? Had it been badly damaged?
No.
Were there any Japanese about? I don't mean obviously fighting you because the war was over.
No.
Did you see any Japanese?
Yes, there were prisoner of war gangs.
How were they being treated?
Quite normally. They were working same as we were.
So they were put to work in Singapore?
They were line laying. So we found one field where there was aeroplanes left on it, The 14-inch guns had all been cut up into lengths. They were laid about. The famous 14-inch guns. There was the gun emplacements, but with snake skins lying about in them, he decided it'd best to keep out of them because there were ladders down the side.
Female population. The population of Singapore. How were they? How did you get on with them?
All right. But everything was wildly expensive. You were paying half a crown for a cup of tea and a cake. When you consider your pay was probably just over £2 a week. So they were very pleased to get rid of me. I was the last of the instrument mechs. They were getting another load in from France. That's why they were quite happy to see the back of us. We'd been a thorn in their side for too long. I couldn't wait to get out, just in case they changed their mind. And I was sent to a unit, a wireless unit, in Singapore itself. They were in empty houses, which looked down onto all the shipping roads. You could see all these ships in great rows below you. Empress of Asia was wrecked on one side, and a big tanker. And we waited for the ship to come. We were going to go on, I think it was called the Highland Brigade. But it was mined coming into Singapore. It got into Singapore, it didn't sink. But of course you can imagine it would require a lot of repair. So we were stuck. There was all sorts of rumours about what we were going to go on. Eventually, it turned out we were going on a landing ship tank, LST 3021. The wireless trucks and trailers went on the ship. They went over the bow doors and that sort of thing. And there was only this small unit of about 30 of us on the ship. And so off we sailed for Celebes. Marvellous. The only bit of excitement, I saw mine bobbing along the water one day. And they spent a bit of time off the bridge shooting at it. And all they did was give a puff of smoke and sink, which was rather disappointing. We were halfway towards Celebes when they suddenly said, the ship has been requisitioned, we have to go to Saigon to pick an Indian unit up. Of course, at this time was the time of Jai Hind.
What was that?
Quit India.
That was the beginning of the movement, as you said, to quit India. Mm. So, did that affect what you were doing in any way?
Well,
about the noise.
So we were diverted to Saigon. That in itself is quite a something. Saigon is quite a long way up the Mekong, which is a very fast-flowing river with a very big delta. You could see ships sunk amongst all the trees down creeks. Saigon itself, there were ships sunk all over the place. And they thought, well, we'll try and take these things off, the Indian units off, through the bow doors if we can. Incidentally, they wouldn't give us any money or anything. The only way to get off the ship was there were so many ships, pardon me, in Saigon, we were tied up alongside another one, and we got off the ship by the simple way of clambering over the rails of the other one, walking across its decks and down its gangway. Saigon.
What were the living conditions on a landing ship?
There were just wire bunks, no insulation, so it was a bit warm.
And was this in the open, as it were?
No, inside.
You were covered?
Yes, you were inside. Completely dark, of course, no portholes. And food was good. Couldn't grumble, really. He had a bed. That's all he asked for in the army.
There were British rations again.
Oh, good.
Were you getting any of these exotic fruits?
And a warning, don't walk past the deck lights on the night. In case somebody sniped you off as you walked past. I was told it was the only place in the world at that time where a British ship had its gun crews closed up all night. It was a funny place, Saigon. There was Vietnam, Viet Cong, Free French, Vichy French, Japanese prisoners of war, a few British of the ranks, you name it, they were there. And We tried getting the thing through the bow doors. Just when they got it nicely sort of lined up, there was some wire got tangled around the props on the ship. So, of course, that ruined everything. And it was 24 hours while they cut all that free. There was another attempt to run through the bow doors. And the Mekong is a very fast-flowing river. It was very, very tricky. We eventually decided, all right, they'd have to ship all the stuff over the side. So all these Indian armoured vehicles and that were all put over the side, lashed down to the deck. And eventually, we set off back down the Mekong to go back to Singapore. Well, the thing is, everything was fine. We came out of the Mekong, seemed all right, and suddenly we hit the storm. Well, the ship was rolling 30 degrees, which is, they said it would go 43 before it turned over. 30 was quite enough for me. I mean, it's a long way for a ship to swing 30 degrees left and right, plus the fact it was going up and down at the same time, and every time it came down a wave, it was like being pulled down a flight of steps. It was a bong, 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 bong. Well, this lasted for 8 hours before we finally cleared it. And I must say, it was a very unpleasant 8 hours. Again, I wasn't seasick, so I had plenty to eat. The heat when you walk past the engine room on the ship was terrific. What it must have been like down there, I don't know. And eventually, back to Singapore we came. This would be February 46. I had been very lucky. While I'd been away, there'd been a mutiny. Nothing had happened. No one had been charged or anything. There'd just been, I understand, a changeover at the top.
This was an army mutiny, was it?
This was the army, the HQ.
Did you know basically what it was about?
Well, they were working to the limits, and they were trying to play soldiers as well. And it didn't work.
So this was your old unit that you left?
Yes, I was quite happy I was out of it altogether. It didn't bother me.
Did anyone suffer, any people that you worked with?
No, nobody was charged or anything. No. So you can tell, you know, that the grievances must have been quite genuine. I mean, I was glad I was not involved at all, thank heaven I was out of it. So, there was nothing to do. This unit that I was with, they were nearly due for repat. So we were stuck in Singapore on some waste ground. And they were all repat for home. That left me. They sent me to another unit at Kranji, which is near the causeway, across to Malaya. And, believe it or not, I was within about 10 yards of the main line from Singapore to Kuala Lumpur. So you can imagine, that was just the icing on the cake. Used to wake up on a morning with the two expresses, Kuala Lumpur, Singapore, and Singapore, Kuala Lumpur, going past. And I was there 6 months. During this time, I had a leave. I went up to a place called Cameron Highlands. At least at that time, we could get leave. I had an invitation to go around the workshops at Kuala Lumpur, but unfortunately, my mother was ill, my father was ill, and I was told I could come home. You can imagine, which took priority.
Had you got to the Celebes?
No.
You never got there.
These Australians that were on Celebes did, I don't know.
Well, your parents were ill, you said.
Yeah. So the thing is...
How long did it take that information to get to you? I mean, had they been ill for some time before you got it?
Well, the first letter I got, when we come back from Saigon, was, your father's out of hospital and he's doing all right. Which was, you know, I don't know what on earth was it all about. And the adventure is he'd had a strangulated hernia. They'd rushed him in. My mother, they thought, had cancer, which she hadn't. And so, I don't know, they said, you'll not get it, you'll not get repat. Yeah, but I did.
What was the process of getting it? How did you go about getting
through
it?
Through SAFA, apparently, they'd done it.
And was that a request from you or from your parents?
No, from my parents. Yes.
And as you say, you got it, and what happened to you then?
Well, the thing is, went down, got my movement order, went down to the aerodrome or airport or whatever it is at Singapore, four-engined York. It was 2 days late due to the bad weather. Took off. We had three pilots on board because there was no automatic pilot. The weather still was atrocious. We came up the straits, wave hopping practically, under the weather. And then, of course, we had to take turns in sitting up with the pilot to keep him awake, because it was so boring. So I sat up with him as we came across Sumatra. We came across the Indian Ocean, and I thought, well, it's something funny. I'd look out of one window on my side, and I could see the sea. And I'd look out the other window, and all I could see was sky. We finally got to Negombo in Ceylon. Apparently, we'd come across the Indian Ocean on three engines. So they changed the engine in Ceylon, and we went up to Maripur, where we stayed the night. Took off next morning, and we came up the Gulf. I've never seen such a barren waste in all my life. And finally ended up in Shaiba, which I'm never sure whether it's in Kuwait or Iraq. We had a salad which looked as though it had come straight out of the oven. God, it was hot. Left Shaiba after refueling and flew across to Heliopolis, just outside Cairo. Put up in a hotel, very posh, because we're a right mixed bunch on the plane, everything from signalmen, you know, to naval officers and God knows what. Sat on the balcony of this hotel and watched the Cairo trams go past. Set off next morning and all the controls jammed with the heat. 2 hour delay and off we went again. Supposed to be going to Benghazi. Bad weather forced us down again and we ended up in the middle of the western desert. You could still see where the trunk tracks had been and everything. Set off next morning and said, right, home or bust. We were flying over Malta and another engine packed up. So we ended up at a place called Istres, near Marseille. We were there for several days, tried to hitchhike on planes to get home, no luck. Eventually they flew another York out to pick us up. He came out, took us to Lynham. While we'd been at Istres, I'd managed to find another signals unit and I'd managed to get myself a battle dress. All the other poor devils ended up in central London, just in Jungle Green, where at least I had a battle dress. So, I ended up back home.
How much leave did they give you?
I don't know, to be quite honest. I tried to work that out. Couldn't make it out.
So after seeing your parents, you would have to go back, you know, go back to another unit?
Yes, I went to Gisborough. And the sergeant major there wasn't very impressed when they were wearing a bush hat. Get rid of that thing and get a berry. So I was at Gisborough around August time, 47. It was August 46, it would be, sorry. And from there, I went to Thirsk. And Thirsk's a horrible place to try and get out of. The railway station was about 2 miles from where we were. But I managed to get home, weekends.